Okay, welcome to another episode of the Three Drinks In podcast. This is episode number 126. I am your host, Vince. Over there is Phil.
Hey.
There's Phil. In this episode, we are waiting for Mrs. Candace Cameron Bure.
It's Bure.
Bure. Let's just go with Bure. Like Bjorn Borg, but not. We're waiting for her to show up and talk about her role in one of the many of the latest offerings from the Hallmark Channel's Christmas lineup this season. But before that happens, I want to remind you all that we are available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search for Three Drinks In Podcast. You'll easily find us. Click subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Three Drinks In Pod. That's at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. Like us on Facebook and email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I'm adjusting all the stack of bingo cards that I made up for this. So I did I tell you who I watched this with that I suckered all my wife's friends into doing this one night?
How many friends?
I think five of them came over. Four.
So yeah. Six of you watched this movie?
Six of us sat there and watched this movie.
Really unfortunate.
Yeah. No, it, I think two of them had to leave halfway through because I don't know why.
I'm sure they got mysterious phone calls. They're like, oh no, my house burned down and my dad's trapped under a rock. I got to go.
The cat got into what? I'll be right there.
Yeah.
No, that's not quite why, but I don't know that. They wouldn't have hung on if had this been, you know, like Die Hard or something like that.
Or anything.
Or anything else. So, so we had this idea, for those of you who don't know.
Didn't you steal this idea?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I heard a podcast it's called A Christmas Ham with Mary Catherine Ham on the Ricochet Podcast Network. And this woman is an enthusiast for these films, but, you know, a knowing enthusiast such that it's not like she likes them. She just gets a kick out of them. And so she did a podcast with a friend of hers. And I listened to it because I had, like, nothing else on my podcast list that was, like, fresh. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll try this. And they were really funny about it. And I go, okay, I enjoy that way more than I thought I would. So I thought, we should look at these because they're a very big part of the holiday entertainment offering on television, you know. And if, I mean, I think everyone kind of watches them pretty ironically, you know, or like you're either really into it and you think they're great, or you're just like, there's nothing else on and let's just see what kind of schlock they came up with this time kind of thing. And maybe you last 20 minutes, maybe you make it like the entire hour and a half. I don't know. But I mean, it's huge business. It's absolutely massive, and it's kept a lot of actors, you know, employed for a very long time. People who either have literally no talent whatsoever, or who, you know, like Candace Cameron. She went off and, you know, did different things with her life after Full House. And now she's trying to make a career again. She's a mom. She's married, but she's still working. And this is what they hire her to do. And it's like, okay, that's fine. So, but they've kind of left a bit of a mark on the culture. So I figured, yeah, we should take a look and see what the deal is here.
Yeah.
I was curious just to see if I could stomach an entire one of these movies. And the answer was barely.
And how did that go?
Well, I have to confess, I got pretty drunk during this movie. Mm-hmm. That there was a lot of red wine that was consumed. But the structure for the evening was helpful. So this woman, Mary Catherine Hamm, came up with a list of 28, I think, different sort of tropes that these movies rely on, rather than hiring writers. What it seems they do is they type these things into a computer, and the computer just spits out storylines based on, you know, a certain combination of these, you know, classic plot tropes. And so I made a bingo card out of all of those, and I passed them out to my wife's friends, and I said, "This is what we're doing tonight, girls. We're gonna watch this movie and see who gets bingo." And I got bingo.
Oh,
I did. I won. And what'd I think actually, what's that?
What'd you win?
I think more wine. I think that was the gift I gave myself, was that I got more wine. But yeah. So we can go over some of these in a bit. But what did you think of A Shoe Addict's Christmas, starring the not yet arrived Candace Cameron Bure?
What do you mean not yet arrived? Oh, she's not here. I thought you meant like in terms of being famous, because she's not famous.
Well, that's also true. She's not yet arrived in the metaphorical sense.
Yeah, well, if it hasn't happened now, I mean, this movie is not, it's this year. It's, you know, it's new. I thought it was horrible. I wanted to kill myself several times. And I thought, how sad a country it is we live in that this is such a big business, because eventually you stop watching things like this and you become a fully formed and functioning adult human. And it just reminds me that very many people don't ever do that. This is like, you know, the wimpy equivalent of watching wrestling, which, and our buddy Greg is very big into wrestling. And if he ever actually listened to this podcast, he could, he will text me, but I know that he never does. So I'm safe to say that, you know, it's wrestling is quite lowbrow, and this is like the cheesy equivalent of lowbrow things. It's poorly acted. The music is extremely grating. The storylines and characters are cliched, and it cannot hold my attention because this, you know, it's already written in your brain what's going to happen. And so the whole time I just sat there melting into the couch, wishing I had more alcohol to drink. And the fact that I didn't get bingo, really, it was annoying. So,
yeah. Well, see, what was interesting about this movie to me, and what actually made it worse,
was the terrible green screen.
Well, which was one of the things on the bingo card. Was the fact that there, it was very difficult to get bingo. You know, you kind of figure, like, given the right story, you know, you could, even there's 25 squares on this bingo card. Generally, you figure you could get most of them filled in, but there were, I think, a total of 13. And some of these were stretches. Like, some of them were like easy stretches. Like, you know, someone named Holly, Chris, Ivy, Nick, or Rudolph. This character's name was Noel. So that one, I let that pass, because that's like, okay, well, that's along the same line as this. It's a holiday themed name for your main character there. But there was, you know, you kind of had to stretch some of these things. Like the snowball fight that took place was like one snowball that happened so quickly that, you know, you might have missed it if you weren't paying attention.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The title is extremely misleading, because she's barely a shoe addict.
Oh.
And this movie had nothing to do with Christmas. It just happened to take place at Christmas.
And yeah, okay, so we'll
like get a to, Shane Black movie.
Yeah, kind of. That's one of the problems of this, but is it though? And we'll get to that in a second. But look, here's the summary as given on IMDb, where this movie, by the way, has a 6.8 from, I guess, people who just log on to IMDb, not an actual critic score. But yeah. So the synopsis is Noelle, a holiday hater who toils in a department store in which she is accidentally locked on Christmas Eve. That's not really a sentence, but there.
That's also not true.
No, that, well,
was
part
it
of it.
Christmas Eve that night?
No, it was just not. Yeah.
It was just a day.
It was just a day during the holiday season. There, she meets a woman who identifies herself as Noelle's guardian angel and introduces her to several, quote, ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. So almost none of that is accurate, but that that's from Hallmark. So Hallmark produced this movie, but didn't bother to figure out what it was about, and then wrote a synopsis for it on IMDb that sort of makes no sense.
Right.
And so here's the biggest thing about this, and one of the problems with the movie overall is that, like, the biggest sort of trope about Christmas movies is somebody who loses their Christmas spirit. And I believe is that on the, let's see here.
Yeah, like curmudgeonly Christmas or something.
Right. There's workaholic or lost Christmas spirit, right? That's actually right in the center of my bingo board here. That's a very easy way to start. She doesn't have that. So everything about this movie that's bad is because they didn't go far enough with a lot of the sort of cliched stuff. So, like, she's not a person who's lost the Christmas spirit or who's kind of begrudgingly going through her department store, which is, of course, you know, dressed to the nines for the holidays. She's just kind of down. That's her problem, is that she's not that enthusiastic, but still fairly enthusiastic, because once you get to her apartment, it's, you know, there's like six Christmas trees in it, and there's all kinds of lights. Like, it's a very thoroughly decorated apartment. But let's for the audience's sake, cuz I'm sure nobody but us saw this movie. We'll do a quick synopsis for our fans here. So basically, you have Noelle, who is a human resources officer at a department store in what appears to be Vancouver, or anywhere, really. It's called Fulton's, and she's kind of a little bit depressed, but not really, just kind of, you know, not that enthusiastic about Christmas, but not unenthusiastic about it. Her mom has passed away. She's got a, you know, frequent relationship with her dad, and there's nothing wrong with her at all, really.
She broke up with her boyfriend a few years ago.
Yeah, a few years ago, and she still follows him on Instagram, and recently he's gotten engaged, she finds out, and it's got her a little bit depressed around the holidays, but not very. Just a little bit. And she bumps into a guy new to her building, I think, or didn't. I don't know, but she's coming home from.
Yeah, he lives upstairs.
Yeah, so she's coming home from a tough day at the office with a bag full of groceries, carrying groceries like you did back in 1950 with no handles on the bags, just like these big, awkward, bulky shopping bags. And yeah.
There's nothing in any of the groceries, so like they fall out really easily.
It's just like empty cartons of ice cream and milk and things like that.
Yeah, like things don't just drop out of the bag when they have weight to them.
So she kind of slips and then, whoa, everything just... Yeah.
Probably shouldn't stack them in a giant tower either.
Yeah. So she kind of has a meet cute with this guy in the hallway, and she's really a bitch to him. She's not very nice at all. And the next thing you know, she shows up I work the next day, and they're planning the fireman's ball hosted by Fulton's department store. And who is she paired up with? The fireman's liaison, which is a word they use a lot in this movie, liaison. But the guy in the hallway, Nick or Greg or Tom or some waspy generic name. Did you happen to catch his name?
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh, no.
Luke. No, no. His name is Luke. The character's name is Jake.
Jake. This is what I'm saying.
Jake Luke.
Right, yeah. Jake Luke. We'll call him Jake Luke from now on. So, so yeah, then they have to, you know, figure out a way to put on this ball. And he has very, very specific ideas about holiday decorations. Really more than any guy that I've ever known might have had about them. But, like, it's a big deal to him that there'd be, like, fun ornaments and, like, snow and giant candy canes. And...
Well, every year the thing is really stuffy.
Yeah.
So now he wants it to be fun.
Right. And then one night, for some reason, we don't really quite understand, she gets locked in the store.
She was downstairs looking for a file.
Right, right.
apparently she was down there for 9 hours.
Did you happen to catch that the downstairs storage area was decorated?
Yeah.
These people were really into it.
It's not like she didn't like Christmas. She decorated the entire store.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Because she, as the...
Like, they commented on it, like, I think you've done too much.
You know, as the human resources officer, it was, of course, her job to decorate the store for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
That, naturally. And then she bumps into a fairy godmother type person. So this is where I kind of got a little, you know, flexible with the, you know, with the wise Santa trope on the bingo board.
Oh, that's cheating. She was clearly not Santa.
Well, no, but she was sort of like a wise, mystical being that knew things, you know. Played by Jean Smart, by the way, who you might recall from Fargo season 2.
Yes.
Yeah. She was very
good.
You
might recall that.
Yeah. She actually had one really good line in this movie that I laughed out loud at when she was telling her about how, you know, different decisions you make, you know, might result in entirely different lives that you might lead. So you get this kind of picture of, like, alternate realities where, like, and she goes, you know, in one of these realities, you actually owned a very successful chain of hot dog stands. Mm-hmm. The way she delivered that line was pretty good. I was like, that's not bad. So anyway, Charlie, who is the mystical lady, gives her old pairs of shoes, or shoes she hasn't bought yet, and these shoes transport her very much at random to different points in her life.
And, well, when she wore them.
Right. So back to when she was, you know, a few years younger and a few years older, and we're getting the glimpse of a Honey, I'm Home guy starts coming in. And this is when we find out that she had a very strong, and this was on here, thwarted artistic dream, which... It didn't help me with the bingo I got, but there it is. And she used to be a photographer, and she gave that up because she was, like, the assistant to the ex-boyfriend who now is getting married to somebody else. And maybe the nude model that he, I have no idea. But and that's sort of it. And then, like, she goes back and forth and learns about the different decisions that she should make. And she, you know, has to get along with Jake Luke to put together the gala and, find herself and talk to her dad more, not just like at all, but more. And then the movie just sort of stops after a while. Like, she finds out that she's going to get married to Jake or Luke. And then the movie just ends.
Well, she goes out with him at the end.
Right. She agrees to go out with him. And then you find out that he's the guy that she ends up marrying.
Yeah.
And everything kind of works out in the end. So that's the gist of it. But here's the thing. Like, there's nothing wrong with this woman. Like, she doesn't have she hasn't lost her Christmas spirit. She's sort of appropriately bummed out for somebody who's single and apparently about 37. And, and whose mom passed away. And so she's not, like, really depressed or anything. And it's just, like, she hasn't been laid in a while. And this is what this movie's about, is trying to get Noelle laid.
Sort of.
Essentially. I mean, it's a bit deeper than that. But, like, what bummed me out is that there's no... She doesn't have very far to go in this movie, you know? Like, she goes to see her dad, like, twice a week. And, like, yeah. They don't have really deep conversations, but... you know, they're not estranged, you know.
My best guess is that, and I'm being, you know, charitable here, is that she was, because the guardian angel character kept saying, like, you're missing all of these opportunities. And because the budget is about, you know, the size of a shoestring, you don't see any opportunities except the boyfriend character. So it's like, I suppose, like, she's going to be, if she keeps doing what she's doing, it's going to get worse. And so they're stepping in at Christmas time to sort of like get her back on track, you know, like stop being a Debbie Downer and notice that this man is, you know, ridiculously handsome and go out with him. It's obvious that he likes you, you know, like he gets nervous and bumbling when he's around her.
Yeah.
And so they were kind of, the guardian angel character is trying to get her to wake up a little bit. Otherwise, you'll miss a lot more stuff.
Yeah, which is a good message and sort of hard to argue with. It would seem to me that if you're going to have a guardian angel, there is probably somebody more in need of this person's services.
Well, she says everybody has one.
Uh-huh.
And you only notice them when you really need them.
But she doesn't really... Okay. So they've decided that she really needs the guardian angel.
Yeah, that's what she said. Hey, I'm only going by the script.
Script.
Not to mention, I think I texted you when I was watching it. I'm like, why do they always send, like, the new one? Like, hey, it's my first time, and I hope I got this right. It's only your eternal soul I'm screwing up if I miss, you know, if it's messed up.
Yeah, that's one of the...
Well, It's a Wonderful Life did the same thing.
Yeah, it's. Like, I was just going to say, it's very much It's a Wonderful Life.
All right, moron, get down there. Try not to screw this one up, but maybe we'll let you hang out in the conference room. You know?
Yeah, like
thinking this office scenario where they send these people out.
It's very much like The Good Place, only nicer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, the funny thing about It's a Wonderful Life is that they spend a good hour of that movie talking about what a great guy George Bailey is. Really, just like the most selfless person on the face of the earth. And then they send this bumbling moron down there to fix his very serious problems. You know, much more serious than poor Noel has here. You know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's take a look at some of these tropes and we can give folks an idea of what it is we're talking about. So I'm just, this is in no particular order, just the order on my bingo card. Wacky townie is the first item here. Somebody who like lives in town, like, you know, think of a small town kind of a movie. This is not that kind of, this is more of a big city or like exurb, suburb kind of setting. It's not like a small, sleepy New England town.
It was Canada, right?
Oh, they're all shot in Canada.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're all shot in Canada in like July, which is right. Why it's all this fake snow and no one has any breath showing on there when they're talking. But I'm not sure if it was supposed to be anywhere. But a workaholic, you know, somebody who's just, which I circled that one because she's not an insane workaholic like some characters, but, you know, she was very into the decorating thing at her job. And
yeah, that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Oh, this is my thing, though. Like, there were not enough of these. They didn't go far enough with these tropes in some cases. So precocious kid. Not in this case, no kids. Just the kids that like this, you know, outside the firehouse with the snowballs. TV star of a bygone era.
That's all of them. They all have that.
Well, some of them have people that you've never heard of. But in this case, we had Candace Cameron. Yes. Of Full House fame and Fuller House fame. I've I've come to think that the Fuller in that title actually refers to the other sister's breasts. So that's what they meant by Fuller House.
I haven't seen it, so.
I watched one episode, and the setup is basically the same. It's just in instead of, you know, the dad having lost his wife, now DJ loses her husband, and she has kids, and they all come back together and then live in the house. But Stephanie, played by, I can't think of the actress's name. Ooh. Gonna drive me crazy. Anyway, she appears in this movie, in that show, following, in real life, a very serious meth addiction. So, good for her for getting her act back together.
Yeah, well, that talk shows were about.
What's that?
She was on all those talk shows talking about it. So
yeah? Well, okay. Yeah.
Sure that helped.
But she's developed, you know, or was augmented or something. Anyway, so TV star of a bygone era, Wise Santa, we already did. Evil Business Empire Threatening Small Business. Didn't have that one here. So not so much of that. Surprisingly Dark Backstory. Did you circle that one or no?
No.
No. Some people wanted to because of like her mom having passed away, but that's not dark. That's just...
It's not like she was murdered.
that would have been good. See, this is what they should have done. Royalty, no. Battle of the Bows, B-E-A-U-S. Didn't have that. No Mistletoe. Down on Its Luck Nonprofit. Did the Firehouse count as a Down on Its Luck nonprofit?
No, it wasn't Down on Its Luck.
No, they were just they were having a fundraiser, but they looked pretty flush, you know. Nice little trucks, everything. Shopping or gift wrapping montage, which I circled, but I don't remember there being one. But not that there wasn't.
There was some kind of montage.
There was like a weird thing where when she gets locked in the store.
Yeah.
She calls the guy, like the son of the owner, who's like. I love that scene. She's like, oh no, I'm trapped in. I can't get out. So she calls him on her cell phone and he's like sitting, like they just cut to man sitting in front of a fireplace. Like yeah. he's not like watching TV or reading a book. He's just sitting there staring at that.
I thought like Masterpiece Theater was going to start because he's sitting in that like armchair staring at nothing.
Just facing the camera. Like he's what? Action.
Like if he was like picked up the phone and looked straight at the camera. Hello. What can I do for you?
Yeah. So he tells her, well, hey, you know, I'm sorry you're stuck in the store, but hey, you know, go nuts. You're trapped in a department. Like, what is she supposed to do? Like, open up all this stuff and start wearing the clothes?
And he's like, oh, make yourself at home. So she does. Like, she starts like taking things out and messing with them. It's like,
puts on like
just sit somewhere and do work. I don't know.
just eating chocolates and puts on these weird reindeer antlers. This bizarre thing.
Yeah.
Lost Christmas Spirit. Did not have it and desperately needed it. That would have been helpful, I think, in this case. Fake Significant Other. Didn't have that one. Photoshop or bad green screen. We had a lot of that.
Yeah.
Really, anytime it snowed or anything, because they, you know, they don't film these things where it snows. They film it, you know, 6 months ago. All at once, I think.
And everything was, you know, like on one street. So if they had to make the department store look bigger or the town look bigger, they would just shoot it from way far away and then, you know, computerize the whole thing.
Yeah. Badly too, very very cheap. Overzealous house decorating. We already said she didn't do. We didn't like watch her put up like insane things, but it was pretty robustly decorated for somebody who was a holiday hater. So yeah. Parent love story didn't have kids. Christmas pageant no go there. Christmas deadline. Kind of there was like to get the gala. Up and running?
Yeah, I was going back and forth on that one.
Yeah. I circled it just because like, after a while, if you weren't circling things, then it was just boring. You know, like trying to make the game more interactive for the movie was what we were aiming for. Thwarted or... Thwarted Artistic Dream. We had that in spades. Which, by the way... So I love the little... Like Luke's over at her apartment studio thing, and he's looking at all of her like all the pictures she took recently, and they're all awful. Like him and the Dalmatian, and like just random sort of semi-candid shots that he's like, "These are amazing! You're such a great photographer." I'm thinking, these are the worst pictures I've ever seen anybody take.
Well, I mean, those are the generic, like, lowbrow kind of, this is what an artist looks like. Pictures of men playing chess in the park in black and white, you know?
Like, I really wanted there to be, you know, somebody on the production crew of this movie who was a thwarted artist and, you know, wanted to be a photographer to take these, because, like, these were really quite silly.
Not to mention, photographer is impossible to make a living at now, unless you're like a wedding photographer.
Yeah.
To be a photographer for like a magazine is unbelievably difficult and rare. I don't really have a lot of people like that.
Yeah, it's a diminishing field.
Yeah, every photographer I know is a wedding photographer who like makes a living out of it.
Yeah.
And I know three or four, and like the ones I've talked to are like, yeah, that's your bread and butter right there. So, like all the future scenes, they show her like happy as a photographer. She's like shooting just some guy with a Santa hat on, like for the magazine. I was like, what's your Annie Leibovitz? You're not doing this.
Yeah, I mean, once everyone got cameras on their phones that are insanely good, you know, everyone's like it's become so ubiquitous to see pictures of people. Whereas, you know, I remember it was a big deal when we got those, you know, disposable Kodak cameras in like high school. Because like before that, you had to, you know, invest in some kind of expensive thing to get pictures taken of people. Nobody had pictures. It was very rare. It was rare. It was expensive. It was time consuming, and now everyone is doing it. And the technology is so good; it makes everyone who's, you know, every Yahoo with an iPhone looks like Ansel Adams. It's insane.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was a risky maneuver going with the photographer instead of like singer or something like that. All right. So I got bingo with this little roundup here. Someone named Holly, Chris, Rudolph, Noel, snowball fight, ugly Christmas sweaters. We had them at some point. I forget where, but they were there. The makeover scene. I think I double counted shopping or gift wrapping montage and makeover scene when she puts all the stuff on in the store. Again, big stretch. And then third act complication, which was my favorite.
Mm.
Which was, of course, in this case, the fact that Mrs. Fulton, the owner of Fulton's, decides that she doesn't want Jake or Luke to be the liaison from the fire department because she thinks it's, you know, his stuff is tacky. And, you know, so Noel has to go to him and tell him that he's off the project.
Yeah. Which is the Grinchy character,
right? Which she goes and tells him, or she tries to, and then doesn't, and then he finds out later, and he's like, kind of miffed, but not really. Like he's like, well, I guess they're paying for it, so yeah, sure.
Well, yeah.
He's like, again, like there was never a moment where there was any tension in the story, even like fake tension.
Like well, even if there had been. You can't take it seriously in a movie like this anyway.
Yeah. And I would have rather have there been like a ridiculous, you know, like the podcast that I heard where I got the idea to do this was they were doing Christmas at Pemberley Manor, which is basically Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
Even like they even kept the names the same, like they didn't even bother to change the names. So the whole thing about that movie was, it was about a, you know, struggling event planner who worked for a large event planning company, and she gets tasked with the annual Christmas gala in this small town in Connecticut or something like that. And they normally do this whole thing in the town square, but there's a sinkhole that developed in the town square, and we can't have the gala there or the ball or whatever the fuck it is. We have to do it at Pemberley Manor, but Pemberley Manor is being sold and the guy is moving away and he's really grouchy and hates Christmas. And like, that's the kind of movie that I want to make fun of. Like, this is okay to make fun of.
So why did we watch this one?
It was really, well, because of the complication with the fact that you didn't get the Hallmark Channel, and we had to find a way to get you access to a Christmas movie.
And now I feel very glad about my life choices that I don't get the Hallmark Channel.
So it was really a scheduling issue, and like I kind of thought it'd be fun for my wife and her friends, because we all grew up watching Full House. Oh, it's the girl from Full House. But
did they have fun?
We all drank a lot of wine, except for my wife, who's pregnant. But, you know, we had as much fun as one could have expected to have had. Was it a lot of fun? No.
Was it kind of fun?
No. Was there any fun? Yes, there was some fun had.
Well, that's more fun than I had. I had no fun.
No, this was work this time, but that's why there was wine.
Well, you know, there's a certain segment of the population that likes this stuff, not tongue in cheek. You know, they actually enjoy it. I couldn't stop thinking about my friends, and because this kind of movie reminds me so much of, you know, quote, traditional values kind of thing, where the girl likes shoes and she likes decorating and she has her best girlfriends and the hunky guy she likes, but, you know, doesn't want to play it too cool. So she plays hard to get and yada, yada. And like, I'm a guy, so I really don't like that stuff. I like superheroes. But, you know, there's plenty of women and others that do like that kind of thing. And so, like you said, it's huge business. I mean, they make 50 of these a year, and they're all the same. And they do it again next year, there'll be 100 more. And I was thinking of all my friends that, like, you know, they'll say things at parties like, when I have children, I'm not going to let them play with Disney princesses because I don't want her to do this and that and the other. And I'm like, but then who's watching these movies? Who's buying all the princess shit at the Disney store? I mean, somebody likes this stuff, right? It's obviously fine for people's psyches that they're watching and absorbing all this stuff. So I think that kind of mentality is a minority among people who just want to watch a woman find love at Christmas time.
Yeah. We just need to.
I don't want to watch that, but, you know, a lot of people do.
Yeah. We need to get Noelle laid. That's really what we're like. And then that's enough motivation for you to sit there and, you know, quietly rep presents in your own house as you put something mindless on the TV. And yeah, people really do like this stuff. And yeah.
It's comfort food in TV form.
Yeah. And even if you watch it kind of tongue in cheek, it can be like that too. Because they do only show this stuff around this time. And, you know, people have a craving for routine and for, you know, sort of things that remind them of previous holidays and stuff like that. And because these are so familiar and there's really no difference between them year to year, they just change a couple ideas around. There's nothing original happening here. Like, it's new but not new. And so at the same time, it's like, oh, it's like this one from last year. And mm-hmm. What it got me thinking about, though, was you were saying before, like, it's not really a Christmas movie. It just sort of happens to take place at Christmas. And I was wondering, so generally speaking, the people who, if you ask 1,000 people, you know, what is the most iconic Christmas movie of all time? The answer that you get usually is It's a Wonderful Life. And what's ironic about that is that it has nothing to do with Christmas at all. You know, and like it's kind of a fun little tidbit that the reason people associate it with Christmas so much isn't because of the content of the film, but it was because the company that owned the rights to the movie went out of business at some point. So it's Frank Capra and what's his name, Jimmy Stewart, and you know, pretty decent movie. And I can't think of the name of the company. I heard this story last year, but like the company went out of business and the rights lapsed. And so it fell into public domain. And once that happens, you don't, like, they're out there and anybody can get access to this whenever they want. So some channel, I think in the New York area, just decided they were going to show this movie every year around Christmas time, like a few times during the course of the holiday season, because no one really watched TV during this time, you know, 40, 50 years ago, like whenever this whole thing started. And that was it. The fact that the final scene of the movie takes place in front of a Christmas tree is about as close as you get to it being about Christmas. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think in reality, that scene takes place on New Year's Eve, not Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
So what's your point?
So does, you know, is it necessary for a good Christmas movie to really be about Christmas?
Yeah.
Or is any really good Christmas movie really about Christmas? Or is it just, is that just the setting for the story?
I mean, well, we've had this literal conversation before on another podcast where we talked about Christmas stuff.
Right.
And I don't remember what I said because I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday. That's not true. I had a bologna sandwich. Okay, so 2 days ago.
Say, lunch is the worst thing for you to say that you don't recall because you have the same lunch every day.
Yeah, I do. And I love it. But what I will say about Christmas movies now is that, and maybe I said this before because obviously I eat the same lunch every day. I don't change my opinions very often. But it has to be about Christmas has to play some part in it for it to be a Christmas movie. Okay. And I thought this before I heard Shane Black on that podcast, and then I was glad to be proven right. But he always sets his movies at Christmas time. Not because they're Christmas movies, but because it's a cheap way to get your emotions into play. He does it constantly, and it's annoying as hell. Die Hard and Iron Man 3 and Lethal Weapon, they all take place at Christmas. Only because it's an easy way to say, it's Christmas time, and my fellow loved ones love each other more at Christmas time. And therefore, if I'm shitty to them, they take it more personally than they would have on a July afternoon, you know.
Yeah.
Home Alone is a Christmas movie because he wishes for Christmas for his parents to disappear and his family to vanish so that when they reappear at the end, it's like a Christmas miracle. Oh my God. You know, that's what makes that a Christmas movie, not because there's a Christmas tree in the background. So
yeah,
you're right. But, like, It's a Wonderful Life has nothing to do with Christmas.
Yeah. And like that's as close, like that's all you have to do though, I think. And that's like, it's a big aspect of Home Alone, but it's not a big aspect of the plot of the film.
No, it doesn't have to be.
And I think that's what makes, you know, what people who make Christmas movies like this, you know, either don't realize or can't, you know, afford to realize is that, you know, you can't really, you know, you have to make it about Christmas somehow, but only a little bit, and hopefully in a very clever way that connects your story, you know, so you could have a precocious 9-year-old run around and throw an iron over at Daniel Stern's face.
Yeah, brutally torture two men in bizarre death traps. Right, because Christmas is a religious holiday that's had the religion sucked out of it, and now it's a secular consumerist holiday, and there's that fine line between like the good feelings, like in a movie like Love Actually, and the crass commercialism of it, and then on one side, and then on the other side you're falling into, you know, the manger scene. So you have to sort of walk that line of, it's a feel-good time of the year, but not too religious now because some people aren't Christian, and you don't want to be too commercialized because that's just too cruel. So it's tricky.
It is a tough needle to thread. And, you know, I
just set everything at Halloween. Nobody gets that one anyway.
Like, so I forget. I'm sure we did this. Do you have a favorite, like an actual Christmas movie? Like what you think is really like, the best movie that is most connected to Christmas?
Not really. I enjoy the Santa Claus with Tim Allen. Like, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, like, that's good. The original Grinch with the cartoon.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. You know, my wife and I were like, we should watch The Nightmare Before Christmas again. I haven't seen it since it was in theaters. And, like, it's still around, so there's something about it people like.
Oh, people are obsessed with it.
Yeah. Do you know what I saw? Speaking of the Santa Claus, the scene where Tim Allen goes to the North Pole for the first time, and he's like, I don't want to be Santa, and this makes no sense, and yada, yada. And they're like, look, just take the suit off, go have a nap, you'll feel better in the morning. And he goes into his room, like Santa Claus's room with the big bed and everything. And on the wall are like 8 or 9 portraits of different Santa Clauses. I'm like, how often does this happen? Like, are they being assassinated and the next guy has to
I mean, do they have a lifespan or do they live forever? Like, are they clear on that?
It was very odd. I was just like, I paused it like, wait a minute. That's not the same Santa. Like,
I haven't seen the movie in a while. I remember liking it at the time and thinking it was kind of clever. It's mostly about divorce, though, which is sort of a kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly about him and his wife and his son.
Yeah.
So, I know I watched it 3 times at your house with your son, but I really do enjoy the Mickey's Christmas Carol.
That's a really good one. It's
nice and short.
It's nice and short. It could be a little longer. They kind of brush through some things. Yeah. But like my favorite one is actually the Patrick Stewart one, which was a Hallmark Entertainment production. I found out just watching it yesterday or Friday night that TNT did back in like 99.
My God, TNT.
Yeah.
Well, now they're not around anymore, so it shows you where the money is.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I like the one because it's Patrick Stewart and because he's really good and he knew the character pretty well. I think he did like a one-man stage show for a long time. And so like, you know, he's just a great actor, but it, like parts of it just go like, there's this, like the one scene towards the end after, like when he's in like the future setting and the people have like picked his corpse clean of all the stuff and like the housekeeper and the undertaker and everything like that. And there's the scene with the guy they go to sort of sell the stuff to, and it goes on for like 10 minutes. Like, why am I still watching this? You know, it just takes forever. And there's even a scene where he says to the ghost of Christmas Future, he's like, show me some, you know, tenderness connected with this guy's death. You know, and they cut to a young couple who owed Scrooge money. And then when they find out that he died, they were elated. I'm like, oh, that's great. And he's like, that's not what I meant. You know, and like, and I looked it up and like, that scene is in the book, but it, you know, it doesn't really make it to most movies. So like most of these, like they omit a lot. And so there's too much in the Stewart one, even though he's really good. And there's like, you want a little bit more Scrooge in the Disney one,
but
just make it like a full half hour instead of like 23 minutes or whatever it is. But although since my son is obsessed with it, it's, you know, it's a good, like I have 20 minutes to do this and then he has to go eat, you know, grilled cheese or whatever. But
I know the Muppet Christmas Carol is popular, but I haven't seen that in a long, long time.
I started watching it like maybe last year, and it's weird.
It's the Muppets. Of course it's weird.
Yeah, and it's sort of like not as much about the regular story as it is about the Muppets. And so it kind of distracts from... I don't know, there was a good article, either in National Review or the Weekly Standard, about it, and I meant to read it, and I have it saved somewhere, but the guy had an interesting take on it. He was like, I don't think this makes any sense. And he's right. But I was about this. You know, there's a version of actually of that that I like a lot. It's the Flintstones one. I think I talked about this last time, too.
Yeah.
They put on the play. It's like a play within a play. And it's deep because, like, 1 minute, it's like somebody, you know, like some kind of dinosaur blowing fake snow at Fred, and then like the next second, it looks like a real, you know, snowstorm. It's just a clever thing. The Muppets actually had a really good holiday special that my wife is obsessed with. Like she would watch it in July when she was a kid because she just liked it so much, and it was this really cute story about how every, you know, universe of Jim Henson's The Muppets, Sesame Street, Fraggle Rock, all get together at Fozzie's mother's house for Christmas.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And what's funny is you can't. So we own the DVD, but it's missing several scenes because they didn't have the rights to a few songs that were in the original version. And I watched it for years and like, this is okay, but like it just cuts awkwardly. And then finally she goes, oh yeah, no, they had to cut those scenes out. I went, what? Oh, there's like whole chunks of the movie I hadn't seen. And we found it on YouTube. You can watch.
Yeah, that. I've seen the actual VHS with a friend of mine in college had it. A friend of mine in college had the VHS with the commercials.
Oh yeah.
Because they had that, but it's so old, you know, it's not like that anymore. So
I think the commercials are like the best part of that.
No, it makes you feel awful.
Oh god, yeah. Just really cheesy. Go buy this now.
Yeah, basically.
So I think that, you know, if you think about it, I actually think that Home Alone might be one of the better ones because it's got just enough Christmas in it to make it sort of poignant and touching. But the movie is also just really good, and everyone who's in it is really good, and the action is funny, and it's just, it's, you know, it's very clever. And it's a pretty tight script. There's not a whole lot in that movie that's sort of extraneous.
Well, I think we said this last time, like, could it happen without it being Christmas time? Not Home Alone. I don't think so.
I think it could. It wouldn't have hit home. It wouldn't have really been, you know, it wouldn't have resonated with people nearly as much.
What other time of year is everyone going to leave their house?
Well,
summer vacation. And yeah. He's going to wish for his family to disappear on summer vacation.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess you really do need Christmas for that to work.
People don't go to travel to see family on Arbor Day, so it sort of has to happen at Christmas.
Well, not anymore.
No. Thanks, Obama.
Oh, that joke got, you know, erased pretty quick, didn't it?
Well, he's not the president anymore, so.
Oh, right. Well, we have a new problem.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was on today, and I forget who plays the mother. I think I can't think of her name. But like, she's so well cast in that movie. Like, everyone in the movie is really well cast, but like, she's such a great mom character.
Yeah, you know, she's a good mom.
Yeah, she isn't like super hot, you know, like, you know, model mom. Like, how, there's no way you had kids, let alone five kids.
She's an attractive TV mom. Like, yeah. She's not like a supermodel, but she's also not the mom you'd find walking around in your local Acme, you know?
Yeah. Same thing of the mom on like Home Improvement.
Yeah. I saw pictures of her recently when she was young.
Yeah.
But they just did a news story about her. Like, she gave up acting to raise her kids, and now she's kind of made a comeback now that her kids are older. And they were showing pictures of her when she was like 21, 22. Oh my God, she was gorgeous.
Yeah, no, she was really pretty, but like on the show, they always had her looking like the frazzled mom of three boys and one jackass husband.
Yeah.
Well. And so it's just hair was always kind of unkempt, and, you know, but like she was great. She looked like a mom. And I think Patricia Heaton did that pretty well too, had that very like suburban white woman look. Mm-hmm. To her,
yeah. When you live in like Michigan or Ohio or something,
yeah, basically, or Wisconsin.
So, what was your favorite part of this movie?
My favorite part of this movie. This is hard.
Oh yeah.
Like, honestly, or like,
no, like, what was the part that made you the happiest, whether it was actually supposed to or not?
I think the hot dog line. Like I actually went that's really funny. I mean that Jean Smart, she's pretty talented. And I'm looking at her going, where do I know this lady from? And I Googled her, like, oh, she was in Fargo, and she was really scary in Fargo. Because it was Fargo. And like, you know, that season two where everyone got killed. Yeah. And they got killed a lot too. Like nobody went quietly in that season. But yeah, it's got to be the hot dog line. That was it. Do you have a favorite moment?
Yeah, when you first meet Captain Handsome and his fireman crew, and they're always in the station just like cleaning the fire truck.
Or like coming off of a shift, and like they're not dirty, but they're like, you're like, whew, that was a tough fire we just fought.
Yeah, they're just like taking their giant suits off and whatever.
Yeah.
They were like busting his chops about taking a desk job or something and like not living up to his father, who used to be like the chief or battalion chief or whatever it was. And they're like, you sure you don't want to sit in the big chair? You want to take the upper level desk job? And he's like, I don't know, guys. I really don't know if I can like live up to that legacy. And as he's saying it, right behind him is the picture of his father on the wall. I was like it kind of like zooms in a little. I was like, huh, that's an odd placement for that photo.
Really driving that one home, weren't they?
Yeah, like, oh my God. And they don't even tell you if he died or anything.
That's like, well, no, didn't they? Didn't like, because her mom died and his dad died, that was like a thing.
Yeah, but did he like die in the line of duty, or just he's just not there anymore?
That's true. He just, oh, you know,
it was so comical.
He actually retired to, you know, Key West. That's where he lives now.
Yeah. Yeah, it was lovable.
Yeah, no, this was,
but it made me laugh. So
yeah, but it's funny. I turned on the Hallmark Channel the other day, and I caught another one of these things. And within 6 minutes, I saw 15 of these tropes. And I was like, oh, we should have watched this movie because it would have been like just more obvious, some of these things. Like right away, we had Deadline. We had Evil Business. We had Workaholic. We had Lost Christmas Spirit. We had Parent Love Story. Like all of it just showed up. Like, oh my God, this is like 15 seconds of film. And you've managed to mention everything about the movie that there couldn't be any more plot to this, could there? You know, he just kept talking. I was like, I can't believe this is still happening. God, it was really so.
Let's not do this again.
No, we're never going to do this again.
Okay,
until next year when we can do it live.
Yeah.
Anyway, as I was saying. So I guess Candace Cameron's not showing up.
I'm guessing not.
Probably not. She's very busy. She's got, you know, she's right, I'm sure right now, filming next year's Hallmark Christmas movies.
Yeah, most likely.
You know, a Shoe Addict's Christmas 2 cobbled together or something. That's what I want to see. I want to see her like lose her job at the Fulton store. And somehow, like, you know, be so down on her luck with the photography business that she goes into shoemaking. She becomes a cobbler.
Do they still cobble shoes?
Sure, I think. No, I took my shoe. I mean, I don't know if they're cobbling. I have a shoe shine guy I go to. He's over there in Larchmont.
Who do we know in Larchmont? That's a great game.
That's true. Anyway, if you guys have a particular favorite Hallmark Christmas movie that you think we should never watch, you should tweet us or Instagram us at 3DrinksInPod. That's at the number 3DrinksInPod. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radios. Search for 3DrinksInPodcast. You'll easily find us. Click subscribe. Tell your friends. Leave that review. Like us on Facebook and email us at 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. if we don't talk to you guys beforehand, although I'd like to, seeing we'll have to see what's playing. Have a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year and happy last night of Hanukkah to all of our Jewish friends. Go ahead, Phil, your turn.
No, I don't know. Whatever you said.
Well, you second to what I did, basically.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was a given.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
As always.
You know, from all of us at Three Drinks In, not just from you, you jackass.
Well, I just assumed, but I figured you'd throw in your two cents if there's a Kwanzaa thing you wanted to mention. I didn't know.
I'm sure the interns wanted to get a message out, so we'll do it for everybody.
I'm not judging. All right. As always, please drink responsibly, and we will talk to you all next time.
Yep.
Happy holidays.
Bye now.